Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now.
This.
I am a peacock! You gotta let me fly!
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
That is it! North Carolina will go to the Final Four!
Peacocks don't fly!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I know I'm great.
But let me just express to everybody out there who does not root for Duke, it is a wild watch.
Earlier on the show, from NBC Sports, Peter King, host of Peacock's Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio. Coming up, CBS Sports broadcaster Ian Eagle. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All righty, everybody. Welcome to hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show here on the air. Peter King and also Mike Florio have already stopped by. You should as well. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. As I pointed out at the top of the program, despite the Cinderella story out of Jersey City, which, by the way, was the original script of Caddyshack. That despite that Cinderella story with St. Peter's, and we all love those runs, it is the most blue of blue blood Final Fours that I can seem to recall, with Kansas and Villanova and UNC taking on Duke. I mean, good Lord. First time they've ever faced each other in the NCAA tournament, and it's going to be in the Final Four in Coach K's last Final Four, last two games, he hopes, of his college coaching career. Can they end that run unceremoniously as they did his Cameron Indoor run earlier on? And to talk about it is the man who called the UNC St. Peter's Peacock game, as well as so many other terrific games, and him at the mic. And I just love listening to him and his watch, the number of different play on words of the word love of UNC's player named Love was really enjoyable. And then you just add in a touch of the Spinarkle, and it really is just a terrific listen. He is the broadcaster, Ian Eagle, back here in the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, Ian?
You have clearly had a lot of proud Peacock representation already.
Yes, sir.
Peter King and Mike Florio, and now I'm kind of an unofficial Peacock.
Yes, sir.
With the St. Peter's run, so it's my honor and my pleasure to be on the program.
You're Peacock adjacent, after I've been calling that game.
Yes,
Ian.
I'm going to put that on my business card.
Man, I thought, you know, I was, you know, obviously hoping for a better game, but UNC is just quite a remarkable story in its own right. What was your front row seat, literal figurative view of it, Ian?
Yeah, we obviously went in with the idea that maybe these guys just don't feel any fear or any stress and any intimidation going against blue blood programs. What they did against Kentucky, the win over Murray State, that was mid-major against mid-major, and then the victory over Purdue, that was really a shocker based on the fact that the Boilermakers had time to prepare for them, had tape to watch, had a feel for what they were going to do, and just had so much raw size, and still St. Peter's found a way to win. We saw Dan Gavitt just before the game got underway. He made a great point when we asked his opinion on the matchup. And he said, UNC, although this is not a normal role for them, they've kind of had that underdog mentality the last few weeks. They were on the bubble. They finished the ACC season strong. They obviously got the win at Duke at Cameron, and then the showing in the ACC tournament. And that mentality probably put them in a better frame of mind than Kentucky or Purdue when they played St. Peter's, because so much was expected of them, and both teams thought they had a chance to win a national championship. So in this particular matchup, they may have benefited St. Peter's by going against UCLA than North Carolina in just the idea that they could still maybe sneak up on someone despite everything they accomplished. UNC, they've already been through the roller coaster of emotions this year, and they're just getting stronger and stronger as they go. I thought they were lights out. They were money. They were impressive from the word go. They looked like one of the best teams in the country.
And that game against Duke, I mean, my gosh, you can't make it up. You cannot make up that matchup. I mean, I said at the top of the show, it's like Packers-Bears in the NFC Championship game, Yankees-Red Sox in the ALCS. This is it. It's go time. Unreal.
Yeah, it's a dream matchup. And it's funny, when these things come about and you start getting the notes and the nuggets that are connected to it, you do a double take. So I'm doing my prep, and you would just assume that you know this already, being a sports fan. But they have never played in the NCAA tournament. You write that down on your prep sheet. You say, how? How is that possible with the history between these two programs, with the legacy of greatness? You would just assume somewhere along the line they would have played in a Sweet 16, in an Elite Eight, in a Final Four, in a national championship game. No, they were only in the same Final Four once, 1991, didn't play one another. That was, of course, the Duke-UNLV semifinal matchup. The retribution game, and it was Kansas, the remnants of the Danny and the Miracle squad that played North Carolina in the other semi. Kansas advanced, and we know Duke advanced. Duke won the national championship. That was the first of many for Mike Krzyzewski. So the fact that it's happening now in Coach K's final year, that it was unexpected from a UNC standpoint, and then add that additional layer of what happened in Coach K's final home game as a coach, the way UNC took over the game, embarrassed Duke at the end, and all of the alums, former players that are standing there and had to watch it with the rest of the crowd, dumbfounded, it just adds a whole other vibe to this semifinal matchup. It's nirvana. It's college basketball nirvana. This is the kind of stuff you root for.
And so, yeah, I guess when you think about it, Ian, that if a team is – like if Duke and Carolina are both, you know, seeded one or two in different regions, it stands to reason like they wouldn't meet, right? Just be for merely unless they get to the same Final Four. So you got one now seeded eighth. It would make sense that Duke and Carolina could play each other at some point in the Sweet 16. But the fact is that they're coming from different parts of the bracket is unbelievable. And as you pointed out, the Cameron Indoor setup, I'm kind of sitting here wondering, like, if that gives UNC more confidence in a game like this, or Duke has a revenge angle they normally wouldn't have, you know what I mean, to erase that. Those kids who might be terribly upset and saw Coach K sort of admonish the crowd for cheering when he's like that was a bad performance. I'm wondering if these kids will now use that as a clarion call to erase that by winning this game, you know?
Excellent question. You know, the other part of the equation is the fact that the committee, for all of these years, I think they've tried to avoid having Duke and UNC play in early rounds because of the history between the two, because they're coming from the same conference. They really do make an effort to try to avoid those kinds of matchups early, because the tournament is supposed to be about other matchups, new rivalries that emerge based on the NCAA tournament. Everything you laid out is 100% true. You get to this stage, and I think each team probably has their own narrative of what it is that's motivating them at this point. The disrespect that UNC was feeling, the fact that Hubert Davis was being questioned early in his coaching tenure after replacing a legend in Roy Williams. They got crushed by Kentucky. It was an embarrassing nationally televised game by 20-plus points. They lost to Purdue rather handily. There were these little markers along the way that led us to believe that North Carolina wasn't a legitimate team this year, and yet they came together and found chemistry at the most important time. And then for Duke, all the expectations, you're looking at future NBA stars on the team, and you start questioning, well, maybe it's just not the right mix, or maybe they just don't have that fire lit inside them. That was the concern watching that UNC Duke game at Cameron. Nobody seemed to want it. And I know they wanted it for Mike K, but they couldn't seem to make it happen on the court. There were shots being passed up in the final 3.5 minutes, and nobody really stepped forward. And all that has changed in the NCAA tournament, whether that flipped the switch or that opened their eyes, or they just needed to get past that moment with all of those great Duke players in attendance and it spooked them out. Who knows? Whatever it is, they're playing at such an exceptionally high level, and they did get tested. It's not like they've plowed through the first four rounds of the tournament. We have seen them pushed a little bit. So to me, that's a really good sign for Duke as well, that they come in battle-tested for this Final Four and everything that is going to come with it, which is a great deal of media attention. They're going to feel the weight of the Final Four and Coach K's legacy talked about for the next 5 days in ad infinitum.
So how many games of St. Peter's did you have? Just the one?
I had all of them.
You had all
of them?
Yeah,
I was like the unofficial soundtrack for the Peacock. And let me tell you, it was glorious. It was a tremendous story. The first game against Kentucky, you know how this works, Rich. There's phases to an upset when you look at the anatomy of an NCAA tournament upset. The first phase is, all right, can they hang? Is this going to be 16-2 at the end of 6 minutes in the game? Or is it going to be 9-6 in that first timeout and they absorb the first punch? So that's the first phase. They pass that loud and clear. The second phase is, well, can they really compete? Can this be a competitive game? Is this going to spill over into the second half and it's a one-possession, two-possession game? And are they going to give the higher seed something to think about, something to be nervous about? And then the third phase is, can they actually win? Because we've seen a bunch of lower seeds push a blue blood to the brink of elimination, but then the future NBA standout takes over or the ball bounces their way and the lower seed is left forlorn and walking off the court thinking what could have been. And they passed all three of those tests, that final test, overtime against Kentucky. You just assume,
right,
well, the Wildcats will take over. They got 10,000 fans in Indy. They're going to feel the buzz of the crowd, and who they are is going to emerge. And the number two seed will advance. They'll have been pushed, but they'll survive it. They didn't. St. Peter's never blinked. It was wild to watch. And then to draw Murray State in the second round, where they thought, oh, wait, we can play with these guys. This isn't out of the realm for the Peacocks to advance against the team that also has been questioned about where they fit into the grand landscape. So it really was a blast, and you could feel it building where people started Googling, where is St. Peter's University? I think most people had no idea. They're filling out a bracket like, oh, yeah, Kentucky, St. Peter's. Where is that? Virginia? Wisconsin? Where is that? It's New Jersey. It's Jersey City. And, Rich, if you drove right now through Jersey City,
yes,
and passed by the university, you may miss it. There might have been, oh, you're like, wait, was that it? What? That one right there, that building. Yeah, that's it. Amazing.
I thought I saw a tweet where that Kentucky might have players collectively have a collective, you know, NIL haul more than the budget of the basketball program at St. Peter's.
I would not doubt that.
That's what I saw.
I saw some other tweets that talked about the finances. You know, John Calipari is one of the highest paid coaches in college basketball. He certainly earned it with what he's done through the years, but I believe his salary is in the range of $8 million, and I believe the entire sports budget at St. Peter's might be $7.5 million.
Tell me you had an opportunity to do a promo for a show on TNT and say that they know Drum A during one of those games, Ion.
Here's the thing, Rich. Every one of our games, this is the first time in my career,
yes,
every one of our games was on CBS. We had nine games.
Wow.
All of them were on CBS. So there was no Drame. There was more Abashola. I had to make a choice, and I read the card. That's what I did.
But still, so, Ion, are you saying, I think you made CBS history then. if I'm not mistaken, because
I've at least tied a record.
Well, I just don't. Yeah. I don't know if Nance has ever done a promo for Cash Nasty House of Highlights. I mean, the way you did the House of Highlights Cash Nasty promo was. I wrote it down. I even wrote it down because I was left so impressed by how you just weaved it all together.
Yeah.
Ian, I mean, on CBS.
The scary part is, I know we're half joking here, but I do care. It matters to me.
Because you're a pro.
That I read these correctly and I make either the sponsor happy or the network happy. I don't know when that was embedded in my brain that that was important in this job, but trust me, I was getting texts during, and I'm shocked you didn't reach out. I thought you would during a couple of these reads. And some of them were like, you have no idea what you're reading right now. And it's true. I had little to no idea, but I sold it damn well.
Yes, you did. I bought it. Figuratively, I don't know if I'll get the Cash Nasty House of Highlights.
No, I get it.
I don't know who. Do we know who Cash Nasty is? Do we know yet? Have we? Wow, TJ, you're shaking your head. We have no idea. Okay, very good. Because honestly, I thought it was like a new show on CBS or something like that.
Might be with G Unit. I'm not sure.
An all new Cash Nasty. Before I let you go, sir, do Ian Eagle here on the Rich Eisen Show. Do we see Ben Simmons soon? What do we see in Brooklyn with Ben Simmons? What do you think?
Yeah, mixed messages. It sounds like he's feeling a little better. The back issue is legitimate, and it is a disc problem. And then he was having problems down his leg as well. So whatever feeling there was in the lower back had continued into the lower extremities. I think they're still encouraged that he's going to be able to play at some point, but they're running out of time. There just are not a whole lot of games left. We're talking about 2 weeks left in the regular season. So the big term that we hear around the NBA is the ramp up. And this has been a very long ramp up for Ben Simmons. They don't believe that it's going to be an issue integrating him, but until you see him with Kyrie, with KD, with the rest of the team, it's hard to evaluate what they're going to be. The crazy part, Rich, they could get clipped in the play-in round. They could if they go against a hot player or a hot team or the circumstances aren't to their advantage, or they could win the whole thing.
Yes.
Like the parameters are really wide right now for this team, which I think for the NBA is actually intriguing. And that's part of the reason why you have this play-in round, to get more fan bases around the country interested in this and create more opportunities for a team to go on a run.
Yeah, I would proffer to say Trae Young might be the last person they'd want to see in the play-in game.
No part of that guy in a one-game format. Everything that I just learned and all these years of doing the NCAA tournament,
yes,
one game,
yes,
anything can happen.
Oh, my goodness gracious. But, I mean, Seth Curry was a heck of an addition, and Andre Drummond has certainly come to the fore, right? Aldridge is coming back, and I don't know, there's no such thing as a ceremonial, you know, first tip, but if there was, I think they'd have the mayor of New York come and provide it, right? If there's such a thing.
That
so
rather interesting, yes.
You know,
I think they still feel confident that they can play with anybody, and if they get their team out there in time to do this, that they could go on a run and win the whole thing. But it's hard to make that proclamation when you just haven't seen it consistently. The Phoenix Suns show you every time that they play, with Chris Paul, without Chris Paul. They have championship medal. Now, this team is motivated, highly motivated, to prove that what they're doing in the regular season is real and it's going to translate in the postseason. The Nets have had such an odd, obscure regular season that I have no idea what the carryover is going to be, if they can just flip the switch and turn it on for the playoffs. They have Kevin Durant, so they're going to be able to compete with anybody. But can they win it? Can they win four games in four straight series amidst what has been a highly inconsistent regular season?
So then
that's the question.
So then the last one for you is, which is the best team you've seen with your own two eyes calling games for the Nets?
I've seen the Suns in person, and I'm just thoroughly impressed with their confidence level and the level in which they execute, and also the coaching dynamic with the players – Chris Paul's leadership, all of that. They've been the most impressive team I've seen, but I've seen Boston playing at a really high level. The Robert Williams injury is a big hit today. Mm-hmm. I've seen Milwaukee play at a ridiculously high level when everything's clicking. I saw Philadelphia roll in an impressive performance. I've seen Utah play excellent basketball. I just think it's a fun backdrop right now in the NBA that you don't have the guarantee team that you say, that's it, no one's touching them. There are enough debates that can go on, especially in the Eastern Conference, that we might see a surprise team emerge here. Miami's going through some stuff, clearly.
Yes!
There's something going on there.
I honestly did not know the Jimmy Butler, Udonis Haslam, Eric Spoelstra set to was like an Oscars preview. I had no earthly
wow.
idea, you know?
That was legit. And then last night, while I got home from Philadelphia,
yes.
happened to be watching that live that you're alluding to.
Yes, sir.
And there was a moment, it didn't take long for me, but there was a moment where you just think, oh, it's a bit. Like Chris Rock hung in there and he didn't react. So, yeah, this must be the bit. And then the reaction after you realize this was not a bit.
You're a live TV guy, so you know the delay that when you know what dumping out of the live television feed and audio looks like, and that was one of the longest I've ever seen last night. Unreal.
Yeah, and when you get a text right afterwards from people who are like, check out the Japanese feed.
I'm That's
like,
right. Okay.
Everything. I'm like, oh wow, they don't care. They dump nothing.
It
was crazy.
Yeah, no, Australia too. There was the Aussie rules. That was quite something.
Yeah, good day, mate. I was impressed.
Ian, it was just great listening to you and the rest of the crew on those calls. Really, just phenomenal. So entertaining, so enjoyable, and I always appreciate you chiming in here on this program.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rich. Jim Spanarkle, Jamie Erdahl, great teammates, our whole crew, Craig Silver, Suzanne Smith, everybody just crushed it. And as you know,
yes.
Spanarkle, it's like Beetlejuice. If you say it three times quickly, you disappear. So don't do that.
I've said it once. You said it once. I think we're on the razor's edge. So I
don't say it three times. Don't test fate.
Thanks for the call, Ian. Appreciate it.
All right. See you guys.
Ian Eagle, the one and only right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Don't say it three times. Beetlejuice. So funny, man. Before we take a break, let's talk about, I don't think I'll be using my Odyssey putter today, huh?
Definitely not.
It's looking pretty bad outside.
Rich, the heavy I keep playing the heavy coming. Stuff might
That's
not
right.
fall for quite a while now.
That's
know?
True. There are some moments where you can play in the rain, as I have seen.
Yeah.
And had the round of your life, too, as a matter
yes,
of fact.
Indeed.
And anybody that uses a Callaway Odyssey putter knows that a round of your life is no doubt within your reach because it is the number one putter on tour, and not just the PGA Tour, but the LPGA and Champions Tours, because the last 37 major championships across those tours, not only do more pros play an Odyssey putter in those majors, but more pros won more major championships in 2021 with an Odyssey than anybody else. So when they say at Odyssey, the number one putter on tour, there's some substance behind it, including the consistent performance and a steady stream of game-changing innovations like the legendary white-hot insert and the new Tri-Hot 5K putter I've been telling you about. It's the classic blade with the forgiveness of a mallet, an example, perfect example of why the best players in the world rely on Odyssey putters when it matters most. See what makes Odyssey the number one putter on tour for yourself at odysseygolf.com. Okay, overreaction Monday on the other side. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Okay, Brockman's hanging out Mexico.
Uh-huh.
All right. I don't know. Is he an hour? He's an hour ahead, right?
Are they
an hour ahead?
Yeah, I think they're. I've never been to Mexico, so I don't.
So all I know is that I think he's probably already, you know, putting Cage down for a nap, and then hitting some sort of tequila. He's definitely day drinking.
Well, he's not much of a drinker, but what he is a gambler. So if there's anywhere where he can lose some money,
I don't know.
You know, I think he's definitely partaking in that.
So wherever he is, I just want to let you know that I'm very much looking forward to this segment because normally he honchos this segment.
He does.
I think this is very important to show how versatile this show is, that we can move things around when somebody's not here. And also for you, TJ Jefferson, to also just show Brockman in a very, I think, one would say... roundabout way to prove to him just how replaceable he possibly can be.
No pressure.
It's time for Overreaction Monday here on the program. Hit it, please.
That was terrible.
That was crap. That was garbage.
This place sucks.
Overreaction Mondays. Monday.
All right, TJ, what do you have over there for us?
All right, here we go, Rich. Like I said, I'm going to try to do Brockman the service here. Coach K.
Yes.
5 national championships going for his 6th, right?
Unbelievable.
Despite what Brockman said weeks ago about, like, this tainting his legacy and all that
Worst take ever. Because he lost at Cameron.
You know, and
his last game.
You look at me, and now, you know, I'm winning the Rich Eisen Show bracket because I picked Duke. And it got me to thinking, Coach K wins national title number 6, right?
Yes.
That means he passes John Wooden as the greatest of all time in men's college basketball. What do you think about that?
No, he won't pass him for most championships, but he will have a significant amount. He's had more Final Fours, and he's also had more wins than anybody else.
But we're also looking at, like, I mean, the modern era. Like, to be able to do it now when guys are transferring and leaving after a year, you know, he didn't have the luxury of keeping Kareem for 4 years, you know?
If he cuts down the nets and he doesn't want... Like, you could make the case that his resume... you know, is worthy of this conversation now that he doesn't need these next two, but it would lead to the question is he greater than Wooden, which I would love for a member of the media to ask Mike Krzyzewski that very question to him personally at a podium where he's got the nets around his neck. He's sitting there. Hey, coach, does this make you better than John Wooden? And just leave it out there.
What if he says, hell yeah?
That would be great. Or he would get off the podium and slap somebody right across the face.
The audacity. All right, Ben.
But I will just say that no. However, he is in that conversation. And yes, for a certain generation, he is that. Like, for young kids and, you know, people in their 20s who never heard John Wooden speak or know of what he was about, other than the fact he used to win a lot with Kareem, who wasn't Kareem at the time, and Bill Walton, that crazy guy who calls games deep at night on ESPN. Oh, yeah, that guy. Like,
thank you for my life.
I think Coach K is... the Wooden of that generation. So
okay.
What else over there?
All right. So, you know, we were talking to Peter King earlier, and it seems like, you know, there's 32 NFL teams, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Seems like everyone's kind of got their quarterback situation for the most part figured out, right?
Yes, teaching.
Kind of made me thinking. I was thinking about the Browns and Baker Mayfield, and it got me to thinking, barring a preseason injury, Baker Mayfield is going to start week 1 of this NFL season on the unemployment line?
No, I think that's an overreaction. He will not be unemployed. He may not be a starter, though. And I told you, I think still, as it sits here right now, if the Browns are not relenting on whatever financials there are, or they're potentially trying to get Baker to where he wants to go to do him a quote-unquote solid, right? This thing may go all the way through to the draft. And again, like, if you are going to create a competition at quarterback, because wherever he goes, he's not going to be installed as the starter. Mm-hmm. So that's simple, you know?
He's going to have to win.
And so, right, he's going to have to win a job, whether it's against Sam Darnold in Carolina or it's against Drew Locke in Seattle or another part unknown that we're just not familiar with right now. There's no way somebody's going to acquire him for that amount of money, which is $18 million. They're just not going to do that. Mm-hmm. So you'd rather maybe draft somebody instead and have your own guy in your own system. You drafted him. He's yours for at least 4, maybe 5 years if you go in the first round. So I think he'll be – I would say this. It's more likely he's unemployed on draft day than opening day.
Okay.
But he may not be a starter come week one. That's not an overreaction at all.
That's crazy.
The way it currently looks.
All right, Rich. A few weeks ago, something happened that really affected you. And we saw the reaction that Juwan Howard got after his handshake line slap. And I tried to tell you, man, I know you were upset about it. And I said, look, Rich, in a couple years, nobody outside of Michigan is even going to be thinking about this slap, right? Well, a few years turned into a couple weeks after what happened last night. And, you know, little did I know that that timeline would get accelerated so quickly. So what happened after that is we're not so much thinking about Juwan Howard's slap anymore. It's now Will Smith. And after the slap heard around the world, I'm thinking Will Smith has tarnished his Oscar win, and people are going to remember him for the slap more than anything he's done in his career.
I don't think that's an overreaction at all. Ever. I mean, ever. It will be, and this is the sort of stuff you need to think about in life these days. I don't think that's off base. I think that's a proper reaction right now. Again, I saw yesterday on my Twitter timeline during Oscar Day, just a few Oscar moments from previous years. Mm-hmm. The you know, Moonlight, La La Land, snafu at the end of, at the end of the Oscars a couple of years ago for Best Picture, you know, Jack Palance winning his Oscar, and he did push-ups on the stage, right? And then David Niven was presenting years ago, the actor, and there was a streaker came out behind him. And, you know, his reaction to it being impeccable and perfectly timed, and his answer or something along the lines that somebody would, you know, have his national television debut, you know, and show up his shortcomings is was kind of a lot. Like, so Oscar moments, great moments in Oscar history will always be shown year in and year out. And this is going to be one of the most infamous, slapping one of the most famous comedians across the face and then winning the Oscar moments later is something that we'll just hopefully never see again.
And no one's talking about that. He reached the pinnacle, man, and no one's talking about the fact that he won that statue. And
it's unfortunate. And it's just there are no winners. So, but I think that's an appropriate reaction.
Okay.
I don't think that's an overreaction.
Now we got some more football ones here, Rich.
What do you got? Okay.
Now that the cheetah is down in Miami, okay, Tyreek Hill is with the Dolphins. Things are going to change a little bit in Kansas City. I mean, you know, teams didn't really play too much man defense against the Chiefs, right? I think that Patrick Mahomes is going to find out that, not having Tyreek Hill, defense is going to have a little bit easier time game planning for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
No, that's an overreaction. You know what? And this is going to gain more and more traction. It'll gain more and more traction. The Chiefs dynasty is over. Brockman, this is your version of the overreaction Monday that the Chiefs dynasty is over from last week's overreaction. No, thank you. I'm not in on that.
You're not buying that one?
No. All Mahomes right. is incredibly, supremely, remarkably talented. Travis Kelce's not going anywhere. The line is terrific. Getting better and better and better.
Tyreek Hill, though, man.
Tyreek Hill is next level.
He was special.
It is next level. It is. He is next level. But I will just say, let's see who they draft. Let's see how they fill in for him. Let's see how it all works out. And I just know that I would bet the Chiefs making the AFC Championship game before the Dolphins. And Mahomes winning an MVP before any quarterback the Dolphins put in there. I'll take it.
Okay.
And you want to take the field? I'll give you the field on that. The field being the Dolphins. You want to take the Dolphins? I'll take the Chiefs.
All right, let's go. All right.
I'll still take him.
So, Rich.
That's an overreaction.
You know, this weekend, NFL coaches, GMs, owners, they all got together. They're all arriving down to West Palm Beach for the annual league meetings, right? And you've told us that when these people get together, they like to talk a little bit,
chit-chat,
right? Like
chat,
the chit-chat. Oh, but yeah. Now you got the owners, you got the coaches, you got the GMs, you got everybody in power. Now they're down there, right? They're hanging out, Rich. They're having parties.
Yeah.
They're at the pool, sipping a cocktail. They're at the hotel bar. Deals are being made. All types of stuff is
being
talked.
A lot of square cubed cheese plates and
yes,
crackers.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Bring me your finest meats and cheeses.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
There's a new player on the roster,
man.
And his name is Crudité.
The charcuterie plates must be outstanding
off
there.
The charts at the Breakers Hotel.
And you know, it got me thinking. The pool, the bar, the combination of the cast and characters. This was a better party than any Oscar gala that we could have had. Gala that we could have had last night.
I don't know, man.
I can confirm, having gone to one.
I
the
don't
Breakers
know.
Was very
and
good.
I don't
DJ.
Just mean last night. I mean over the weekend. This party. Just like Bill Murray said in Chase, Lee Harvey, you know how to party.
No, I know, and
you are a madman.
I don't know, man. There's still some people that still need to, you know, it's still a work. It's still a work event. It's still a work event. You're it's not like the caddies are jumping in the pool for 20 minutes.
No,
like it's still sort of like when Rodney walked into that dance and the dinner the first time.
Okay.
You know, I need to choose my words carefully here. But it's not like everybody's cutting a rug.
All right. So you're saying they know how to act in public.
No,
is what
I take Vanity Fair Oscar party or Governor's Oscar party or whatever over. It's a wonderful event. It's terrific. It's very nice, but it's still a very corporate structure.
So Belichick didn't go up and slap Peterson for robbing him of a Super Bowl.
Okay. I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. But it is a great to see.
It is.
All of these football men and women in this place all together, and there's just a lot of chit-chat, though, and you pick up a lot of stuff.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes, it's a much more well-to-do combine.
All right. I'm just saying, I thought that might be the party, bro.
Yeah, there's definitely a better drink selection than at the combine.
All right, and last one. We found out today Hard Knocks is coming back.
Yes, sir.
And the subject of Hard Knocks, the team that we're going to follow for five episodes, the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
All right. That means Dan Campbell's going to be front and center.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah. And Dan Campbell's going to be talking about his 2 40-ounce coffees with 2 shots of espresso each. You know, that's 80 ounces of coffee and 4 shots of espresso. Just want to point that out to each of you. And that's how he kickstarts his day. And he's going to talk about, you know, biting people on the kneecaps and clawing and fighting and doing all that. So my feeling is after the 5 episodes of Hard Knocks, Dan Campbell, he will take his place among other home box office legends such as Omar Little, Tony Soprano, Lee F. Schreiber, Vinny Chase, and Larry David.
You forgot.
Dan Campbell's going to become an HBO legend after this.
You forgot one. He is going to be the Kenny Powers of Hard Knocks.
Oh, beautiful. Even better. Put him on the list.
He's the Kenny Powers of Hard Knocks.
He is the Kenny Powers.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think any of us could survive that much coffee with 4 espressos.
That's more of the way. Like, I'm going with the...
I like that. I like your style.
He should read like a table read of The Righteous Gemstones. Dan Campbell.
Uncle Baby Billy.
He should do one... Like, they should hand him... One episode of Eastbound and Down, one episode of The Righteous Gemstones, one episode of Vice Principals?
Vice Principals, can't forget them.
Danny McBride oeuvre. He should do, they should have Dan Campbell do that.
Danny McBride and Walt Goggins should be honorary captains for a game this year.
At Hard Knocks. They should send Danny McBride to Hard Knocks.
So he can bite off
Lions
some kneecaps.
Training camp and just have him. Yes, I would pay to see Danny McBride read off a transcript of Dan Campbell's introductory presser.
That would be great.
I would pay to see that. In the same way that Hard Knocks years ago began with Caliendo doing Gruden with Gruden in the room, I would take Danny McBride going in and doing Dan Campbell with Dan Campbell in the room right now.
All right, HBO, you heard the man.
You're welcome to my colleagues at NFL Films. You hear me, Ross? And
your first episode. You done. Know. And that's it, man. That's all I got for Overreaction Monday.
Okay.
TJ killed it. He did great.
It was all right. It was my first time, people. Be gentle in the comments on YouTube. Please.
Well done. What's that's great.
Well, you know, someone's going to tell me I suck, of course.
No, you do. You know what? Everybody sucks. You know, whoever, wherever he is right now, he should do another, you know, shot of Klaas Azul if he's if he's doing that. Brockman. Come on back. Okay. Take a break. Finish up with some phone calls. Set up the rest of the week right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Okay, back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Now, you talked to me, Mike. You paid me a terrific compliment about the number of hours that we've
spent together,
and you've done more live TV than me and what have you. There's a caller on line one that has an opportunity, I think, to chime in on this. And I'm seeing the name here, and I'm wondering if this is, in fact, who I believe it possibly can be, wanting to talk on this subject. Van Earl in the state of Florida. If he chimes into the way that I think he might chime in and say hello to everybody, then it is him.
Earl,
are you there, sir?
You know, I'm just overwhelmed with gratitude that you would honor me by accepting my phone call. And I really wanted to call, Rich, and also let you know that I'm overwhelmed with sympathy for you and all your other teammates that y'all had to put up with Michael Del Tufo for as long as you have.
Calling into the Rich Eisen Show right now.
Love it.
Oh, my goodness gracious. How you doing, Van? Van Earl, how you doing?
I had to put up with Michael over at Fox for a long time. So the fact that you guys have been able to accept him onto your team and keep him there off the waiver wire is highly impressive.
No, this is nuts.
You got a good story? You got a good Del Tufo story for me, Werner O'Reilly? You got a good one?
I got one if he doesn't.
Oh, my God.
Well, we know you got one, Mike.
He's calling in.
Nothing specific except that I'm also overwhelmed with gratitude that Michael was there running the board when I messed up a lot of times.
No. All I remember is one Super Bowl down in San Diego being able to sing on the balcony, ain't that a kick in the head, to the entire audience of other people in the hotel that literally clapped for us when we were done.
Absolutely. And I only sang it about 200 times that week.
We had a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh.
I can remember, like, this is tripping me out because I was a big Van Earl fan back in the day.
The whole country
was. Welcome to Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, California. I remember all of that.
It's Los Angeles.
Well, Mike, we need Van Earl to do that as a drop. Get that clean.
Can you imagine Van Earl? There was something called Headline Sports back in the day. I mean, that was the beginning of that and SportsCenter pretty much at the same time, right?
Back pretty much.
Oh, my gosh, almighty.
Pretty much.
Well, how you doing?
When I listen to it.
Well, I appreciate that. How you been? Everything good?
Life is full of adventures as I have taken on the new occupation of golf caddy. So now I get to heckle rich guys when they hit really bad golf shots.
By the way, I think people would pay charity for that sort of thing. Van Earl, right? I'll tell you that. But
hey, if I connect with you and all the power that you possess, maybe we can make it happen.
Well, call back. Let's connect anytime, man. This has been a blast. Thank you for calling in. And Mike,
Van Earl, awesome.
How cool is this?
Awesome, man. We were way back.
Thanks for the call, Van Earl.
Thanks, Van Earl. Have a great one, brother.
Thank you, guys.
There you go. I thought he would come on and say, hello, everybody.
This is Van Earl Wright.
That is
CNN
funny.
Headline Sports.
I was a baby in TV when I first met those guys. Like, yeah.
Man, I used
when
to
was Headline Sports on the air, man? Like was
Well, he came from Headline to Fox Sports Net.
Well, there was Sports Tonight. I remember when I first got dude, when I first got to ESPN, okay, they would have the ratings of the 6 o'clock Sports Center, 11 o'clock Sports Center, and the 2:30 a.m. Sports Center up on the wall. Every day they'd post the ratings on the wall for everyone to see. And the number that they also posted as the, you know, measuring stick between us and them was CNN Sports Tonight. Yeah. You know, Fred Hickman, you know.
Nick Charles,
and Fred Hickman. And that was it. It was
great.
Us against them when I first got there. Yeah. And then Headline Sports, Van Earl Wright got involved.
I mean, he would be like they would do it every, like, on the half hour at one point. That's where I remember Van Earl first from.
I just remember, would it be every half hour or 15 minutes? Every 15 minutes?
15 minutes. I remember.
And Headline News, they'd pop in the sports.
They'd pop in the sports, and he'd be like, that's the only way you
and
knew
would
it was
do the
on.
Highlights in Los Angeles, what? California.
Los Angeles. That's the only
Headline
way
Sports.
Headline Sports, Van Earl Wright.
Right. Yeah.
Headline
Dude,
Sports.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was like in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And you sang karaoke with him?
Yeah, we got to for a whole entire, it was amazing.
The alcohol was not involved at
no.
all, was it?
No. Never. No. Rich, you know, you're a karaoke guy. You can't.
That leads me to believe the alcohol was involved. Like, yeah.
Says the guy at the draft in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, hey, guys, just do us a favor. Don't curse.
Santa's Pub. Is that what it was
Santa's
called?
Santa's Pub.
Right? And we go there. And
sign
on the
wall.
It says on the wall.
I didn't read.
On the wall, it says no cursing.
It said that twice, Rich.
And he gets to the microphone, and he grabs it, and he says, you dropped the MF-er.
MF'd. Yeah. Loud.
You went MF.
Loudly.
I mean, you know,
twice.
You get your one chance. You just got to.
Not one
like
chance.
M&M.
You did it twice and then almost did it three times.
The
it
guy was, tapped me on the shoulder and said,
almost like Beetlejuice.
Did you read?
Mike just has his jeans. Calm down, Delta.
Yes, that was libation.
Man, life is remarkable.
And Mike, you know, you had me down there in the middle of, I don't know where we were, Tennessee, Alabama. You don't need to draw attention to me in those parts. I mean, I was a little nervous.
All right, so we made it through. We made it through one show without Brockman. And Del Tufo's leaving, so it'll be Feller in his spot. You know, we don't replace Brockman. We just try and make it through. So we made one through one show. It's a great show.
Yeah.
And you did a great job with Overreaction Monday.
Yes, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Should we just tomorrow do another one of his segments with you just to piss him off?
Will we do the news tomorrow?
Yeah, let's do the news. Yeah. Do the news tomorrow. Fantastic. Michael Chiklis in studio. That'll be a great Tuesday program. Don't miss it.